Chapter 41. Three Hebrews in the Fiery Furnace. This chapter is based on Daniel 3. The dream of the great image had been given that Nebuchadnezzar might understand the relation that his kingdom should sustain to the kingdom of heaven. In the interpretation of the dream, he had been plainly instructed regarding the establishment of God's everlasting kingdom. The king had acknowledged God, saying to Daniel, "Of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and a revealer of secrets." Daniel 2, verse 47. For a time, Nebuchadnezzar was influenced by the fear of God, but his heart was not yet cleansed from a desire for self-exaltation. Filled with pride, in time he resumed his idol worship with increased zeal. The words, "Thou art this head of gold," had made a deep impression on the ruler's mind. The wise men of his realm, taking advantage of this, proposed that he make an image similar to the one in his dream and set it up where all might behold the head of gold, interpreted as representing his kingdom. Pleased, he determined to go even farther. His image should not deteriorate in value from the head to the feet, but be entirely of gold, symbolic of Babylon as an indestructible, all-powerful kingdom. Establishing a dynasty that should endure forever appealed strongly to the ruler, before whose arms the nations of earth had been unable to stand. Forgetting the remarkable providences connected with the dream of the great image, and that, in connection with the interpretation, the great men of the realm had been saved an ignominious death, the king and his counselors determined that they would endeavor to exalt Babylon as supreme. Daniel's interpretation was to be rejected and forgotten. Truth was to be misapplied. The symbol designed of heaven to unfold to men important events of the future was to be used to hinder the knowledge God desired the world to receive. Satan knew that truth, unmixed with error, is a power mighty to save. But when used to exalt self, it becomes a power for evil. The Golden Image, the Eternal Glory of Babylon. From his rich treasure, Nebuchadnezzar made a great golden image, similar to what he had seen in vision, save in the one particular of the material of which it was composed. The Chaldeans had never before produced anything so imposing as this resplendent statue. It is not surprising that in a land where idol worship was of universal prevalence, the priceless image on the plain of Dura should be consecrated as an object of worship. A decree went forth that on the day of the dedication, all should show their supreme loyalty to Babylon by bowing before the image. A vast concourse from all people, nations, and languages assembled. When the sound of music was heard, the whole company fell down and worshipped the golden image. The powers of darkness seemed to be gaining a triumph, connecting permanently the worship of the golden image with the established forms of idolatry recognized as the state religion. Satan hoped thereby to defeat God's purpose of making captive Israel in Babylon a means of blessing to all nations. But God decreed otherwise. Not all had bowed to the idolatrous symbol of human power. Three men firmly resolved not to dishonor the God of heaven. Their God was King of Kings. They would bow to none other. To Nebuchadnezzar was brought word that some dared disobey his mandate. Certain wise men, jealous of the faithful companions of Daniel, reported to the king, "There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." The king tries to pressure the Hebrews. The king commanded that the men be brought before him. Pointing to the fiery furnace, he reminded them of the punishment awaiting them if they should persist in their refusal to obey his will. but firmly the Hebrews testified to their allegiance to the God of heaven and their faith in his power to deliver. As the three Hebrews stood before the king, he was convinced that they possessed something the other wise men did not have. He would give them another trial. If only they would unite with the multitude in worshiping the image, all would be well. "But if ye worship not," he added, "ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace." Then, with his hand stretched upward in defiance, he demanded, "Who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" In vain were the king's threats. Calmly facing the furnace, the three Hebrews said, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, if this is your decision, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king." Their faith strengthened as they declared that God would be glorified by delivering them, and with assurance born of implicit trust in God, they added, "But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." The king's wrath knew no bounds. Full of fury, the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, representatives of a despised, captive race. Directing that the furnace be heated 7 times hotter than usual, he commanded the mighty men of his army to bind the worshippers of Israel's God. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning, fiery furnace. Verse 21, NKJV. "And the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego." God in the furnace. But as the Lord's witnesses were cast into the furnace, the Savior revealed himself to them in person, and together they walked in the midst of the fire. In the presence of the Lord of heat and cold, the flames lost their power to consume. From his royal seat, the king looked on, expecting to see the men who had defied him utterly destroyed. But his face grew pale as he started from the throne and looked intently into the glowing flames. In alarm, he asked, "Did not we cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? Lo, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the 4th is like the Son of God." How did that heathen king know what the Son of God was like? The Hebrew captives in Babylon had, in character, represented before him the truth. When asked for a reason of their faith, they had given it without hesitation, teaching those around them of the God whom they worshipped. They had told of Christ, the Redeemer to come, and in the form of the 4th in the midst of the fire, the king recognized the Son of God. His greatness and dignity forgotten, Nebuchadnezzar cried out, "Ye servants of the Most High God, come forth!" Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth before the vast multitude, showing themselves unhurt. The presence of their Savior had guarded them from harm, and only their fetters had been burned. Forgotten was the great image set up with such pomp. "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego," the humbled king acknowledged, "who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. There is no other God that can deliver after this sort." The king of Babylon endeavored to spread before all the peoples of earth his conviction that the God of the Hebrews was worthy of supreme adoration. And God was pleased with the effort of the king to make the royal confession as widespread as was the Babylonian realm. By the deliverance of his faithful servants, the Lord declared that he takes his stand with the oppressed and rebukes all earthly powers that rebel against the authority of heaven. In the hour of their trial, the three Hebrews remembered the promise. When thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee, and through the rivers, they shall not overflow thee. When thou walkest through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame kindle upon thee. Isaiah 43, verse 2. The tidings of their wonderful deliverance were carried to many countries by representatives of the nations that had been invited by Nebuchadnezzar to the dedication. A time of trouble such as never was. Important are the lessons to be learned from the experience on the plain of Dura. In our day, many of God's servants will suffer humiliation and abuse at the hands of those who are filled with envy and religious bigotry. Especially will wrath be aroused against those who hallow the Sabbath of the fourth commandment. And at last, a universal decree will denounce these as deserving of death. God's people must make it manifest that no consideration can induce them to make the least concession to false worship. To the loyal heart, the commands of men will sink into insignificance beside the word of the eternal God. Truth will be obeyed, though the result be death. The Lord will work mightily in behalf of those who stand for the right. He who walked with the Hebrews in the fiery furnace will be with his followers wherever they are. In the time of trouble, his chosen ones will stand unmoved. In their behalf, Jehovah will reveal himself as a God of gods, able to save to the uttermost those who put their trust in him.